This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as ever, by accredited sex and relationship therapist Kate Campbell. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Mum, today is a very, very special episode. It's something a little bit different today.
Is it?
We are going to ask, what can we learn from Dua Lipa about dating? Dua Lipa, who has just released a new album called Radical Optimism. Ooh. And within this album, lots of different songs about lots of different facets of like modern dating and modern love and that sort of stuff. She's got a song in there called Houdini. And I just wanted to ask you about this. In the song, it says, "Catch me or I go, Houdini." Now, didn't Harold Houdini, wasn't the whole point with him that he was already caught and then he escaped?
Yes.
Yeah.
They used to chain him up, didn't they?
Yeah, he was a famous escape artist. So I think the lyric sounds catchy. It's like, catch me or I go, Houdini. But it's like the whole point of him that he was caught willingly, chained up, and somehow still escaped. But anyway, it doesn't, you know, willingly tie me up and then I will escape. Houdini doesn't really work as well. Anyway, listen, we're going to focus not on Houdini, but we're going to focus on the song Anything for Love, because I think some of the lyrics in there throw up some interesting conversations about dating in the modern world today. So let me start. I'm going to read out the lyrics and probably stop singing them just in case, of course, the copyright people come and strike our asses. So here we are. "We're all so scared of forever, and no one promises always. We're not perfect together. That means we've got to part ways. We're all terrified of heartbreak. Run at the first sign of problems. Make it look way too easy. We all got too many options. But I'm not interested in a love that gives up so easily. I want a love that's set on keeping me. When it hurts, we don't even think to cut it off. Remember when we used to do anything for love." I wonder whether this song
is going to... Did we finished?
That's it, basically.
Was that it?
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's the chorus?
So the last line, well, that was the chorus. The last line was, remember when we used to do anything for love? Question mark.
Anything.
Well, yeah, that's the question.
Ooh.
So the first little bit of that is, "We're all so scared of forever and no one promises always." The reason this struck a chord with me is it's something that we've talked about before where these days, I say these days, but people talk about often about being with people who are commitment phobes.
Mm.
And we also have that thing where people are very late to say that they're exclusive.
Everyone's casual.
And is this something, so this is the thing, it's definitely the case amongst my friends. Is this what you're seeing as well? People aren't committing into relationships.
Well, it's really interesting. It's come on during millennials.
Mm-mm.
So it's increased. And when we get to Gen Z, you've got people who are completely cool with being casual because they're more interested in their own welfare and more of them won't get into relationships anyway.
Yeah,
or they want different kinds of relationships and they're more gender fluid, more sexually fluid and everything. And there are far more relationship anarchists amongst them.
And what's a relationship anarchist?
Relationship anarchy is treating everybody as equally important. So you don't have the one, no such thing. I'm up for that. You know, that sounds really good. Because, you know, I mean, that doesn't mean I don't think that you should have a special partner because a lot of people love it. But if you did have a special partner as a relationship anarchist, you would say, well, my best friend's as important as you are to me.
So it's not just relationships. It's not like polyamory.
It is a form of polyamory. But if you go back to its purest form, it is. And a lot of people think it's just about polyamory. But actually, it's about all forms of relationship.
So let's say someone at work who I've had a couple of chats with and we get along well, I see them as on the same footing and as important as my girlfriend.
Well, no, because you would have your personal response to them. What you wouldn't do was create a hierarchy. If you felt very strongly about your friend and you felt very strongly about your girlfriend, you wouldn't say, oh, my friends invited me out tonight, but I can't go because since then my girlfriend said she wants to cook us dinner. You would go with your friend. You wouldn't say, oh, sorry, something's come up. You wouldn't do that.
Okay, I can sort of see that. But that's interesting as well, because you touched on something here about Gen Z being involved in themselves. And I think we'll come on to something like that later. So I wonder whether that...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, but you know, Gen Z don't arrive overnight. Millennials have been leading up. So if you hadn't got... Who's before millennials? Is it Gen X?
Gen X, yeah, I think so.
Whatever they did would have affected millennials, and then millennials would have been developing.
Yes.
You know, and then because they started in the 80s, didn't they? So that's very different to when they ended in the 90s, mid-90s. Mm-hmm. So you've got quite a big change, and so you're hitting the ground running when you get to Gen Z.
Yeah.
Because they've adapted, they've had all the gender change stuff.
They've had the internet their
entire
lives. They've
had the internet. They are the tech ones. So this is a completely different world where people communicate in different ways for them. So we've slid into where they are.
Yeah, it's not just like overnight.
It's not
like
just, they're not intrinsically. I mean, what I really, really, really feel strongly is we don't think of generations as intrinsically something. They were born that way. No, they didn't. They're responding to their environment.
So those first two lines, we're also scared of forever and no one promises always. I think there's a lot of people who talk about people being very non-committal in dating at the moment. So these next four lines kind of come together.
But before we start,
I
like those two lines, because if you remember, we did a podcast where we were saying you shouldn't be thinking, I mean, obviously people get married or they go or they commit in some way, they go into a relationship and they hope it's going to last. Mm-hmm. But all you can think about is now, because you don't know what's going to happen. And if you're wanting somebody to promise you forever, they can't, because that would be a lie. They cannot promise. They do not know. They might say, I don't want to ever leave you. But, you know, they might be run over by a bus tomorrow. Anything could happen. Or, you know, or
these
hit on the head.
These are some amazing vows that you're saying right now. Yeah. I do now. In this moment, I do. But, you know, just so everyone is aware, at this wedding, I could die. I could still die tomorrow. I might die tomorrow. Yeah, that's interesting. I get what you mean. So that is a good point. You can't commit in that way. But why do you think people don't want to commit? Because isn't it nice to think to yourself, well, oh, this person has committed to me and I have that security, rather than just every day they wake up and go, I think I'll still love you today, as long as I don't die.
There's a lot of fear, isn't there, about what happens in a relationship. And there are lots of reasons why people might feel that they're going to be submerged into somebody else, that they, you know, they'll lose themselves.
Yes,
or that they won't be able to do what they want to do. Their potential will be taken away from them. And that's true. That does happen. That happens in relationships. So you can understand that kind of fear. And I think a lot of people have grown up watching their parents. In the past, we had very clear sort of rules, and we didn't have contraception the way we do now and things like that. So people would get married to have sex, and then they're kind of stuck with it. Whereas that doesn't happen anymore. You can make choices. And so I think a lot of people look at relationships, look at other people and think, I don't want to do that. And they're more anxious as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Particularly if they don't know why something happened. So another thing that's definitely affected Gen Z is parents who have been reluctant to let them see an argument. So there's no doubt about it. There are some people who argue way too much, and that's dreadful. But there's also a lot of, you know, making the world appear like a lovely, fluffy place. And, you know, if the rabbit dies, you buy another identical one rather than let them know the rabbit's died. That sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So people don't, therefore, understand how to repair a relationship, because they never see relationship repair. They see their parents always loved up. So when they do witness a row, it's usually when there's a really bad one. And so they think if there's a row, it's going to be fatal or terrible or something awful will happen. And when that's not true, they're having rows all the time. They're just not showing it.
This is perfect. Let's look at these next four lines.
Okay.
We're not perfect together. That means we got to part ways. We're all terrified of heartbreak. Run at the first sign of problems. Is that not exactly what you're talking about there, where people see any sort of conflict, they go, well, shit, let's get out of here.
Well, no, they don't. They don't. If only they, you know, it's not like running at the first sign of problems. I mean, some people do, but more to the point, people will not let there be problems. I'm always saying this. Relationship therapists are absolutely horrified and full of heart sink when a couple come in and say, we're soulmates. Because they need to be exactly the same. And what they're telling you is, we can't deal with change. We can't deal with difference. We can't deal with conflict.
We have to agree on everything.
We have to agree on everything, yeah.
Because we're so alike.
Because we're so alike. Why is that interesting? God, you want somebody who says, oh, no, I really like skydiving. And you don't want the partner to come along and say, oh, I'll have a go at that. That's their thing. Leave them alone.
Okay, that's interesting. But then so many people would be like, oh, well, we're not into the same stuff. Like, they don't care about any of the things that I care about.
And?
So you're saying you can be into it with other people. This person doesn't have to be into everything that you're into, and you guys do everything together.
What's so fascinating is there's the Pew research from the last couple of years that I've been looking at, and it's really fascinating. It's kind of given the impression that the biggest problem for couples in America, anyway, because it's American research, is about politics. And it's been the same from what I've seen of over here research. There's lots of families where they really can't take political difference because it's become particularly polarised. And so that's a big problem. But apart from that, no, our other interests do seem to be okay. And even some people manage that.
But what about, because this says, you know, we're not perfect together.
Well, you can't be, can you?
And we run at the first sign of problems. Sometimes I do think there is this idea of fight or flight, and flight seems to be the option for people. Because what we talked about earlier, when you were talking about people, maybe a cultural shift in personal growth and personal happiness, which has led to people prioritizing their personal well-being, which is kind of what you mentioned with the Gen Z people, when you were like, sort of like, they're sort of focused on how they're doing and how they're having a nice time. So challenging relationships, they're sort of sacking off.
Argue with me.
This is what I want.
No, because they're not selfish. I'm not saying they're selfish or that they can't care about other people as well, but they prioritise themselves. They understand that unless they're okay, because they're the generation that have had such shitty time, mental health-wise, you know, with all that's been going on, pandemic and everything. If you think about that, they know that they have to prioritise their mental health, and so they do. And their own well-being.
Which means retreat?
No, it doesn't. It means that they look after themselves so that they can be there for other people, because they understand that unless they're okay, they can't be in a relationship. And that sometimes don't get into a relationship where you'll fuck up someone else and they'll fuck you up. Look after yourself and then have it. The running away thing is much more millennial and beyond that. You know, it's much more... Right. Okay, let's scoot off the minute something bad happens. It's not that at all, I don't think. I think what is happening is that people are putting up these amazingly curated Instagram profiles and these amazing and wonderful profiles on their dating apps and things.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then they're having a nervous breakdown because they don't live up to the image they've created.
Yeah.
And also they're thinking, well, because I can go on this app and I can choose the perfect person... Oh. Why would I settle for anything else? And they bin them off before they even get to a date.
Well, the next line, make it look way too easy.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right. That's films and television, but Instagram as well, with like couple goals and stuff on your accounts and things.
Oh, and sex looks so easy. You know, people go get jump into bed, do the dirty deed with no foreplay. I did not call it a dirty deed, did I?
You did call it a dirty deed.
I apologise.
Yeah.
Have a lovely time with no with no foreplay, and then both climax simultaneously.
Yeah.
And it's all wonderful. And then hop out of bed and there's no wet patch.
Yeah. The wet patch being the
wet patch.
Yeah, but what if people don't know what you're talking about?
Well, then they haven't had sex, have they? They'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, fair enough. But that is so interesting what you're saying as well, because the next line that I also thought about was, she said, we all got too many options. And again, that's that thing of on your phone, the dating apps and stuff, you can just swipe away. And, you know, if something isn't perfect on the first go, then you just go, well, that's fine. Or even if it is good, but you're like, ooh, but maybe... you know, with each swipe, it's like, it's literally addictive. It's like like a slot machine. It's like, well, I just can keep,
it's a dopamine hit machine with every swipe, every new person you look at, every click. It's so true. And also people get cross with themselves, because if they've chosen the perfect person and then they turn out not to be, they don't trust their own judgment, which is absolutely crazy. Because as we know, it's not the obvious things that are the most important. It's the unconscious fit.
Yes.
And you can't know about the unconscious fit until you've met the person. Really?
Yes. We've got a whole episode on unconscious fit, and that we've called the episode The Three Reasons Why You're Attracted to Someone. So check that out. But it's the thing that you need for a relationship to really work with someone, right?
It is. And the whole point of that is it's all about putting right something that's wrong from the past. So relationships are a form of self-development more than anything else. So forget the idea of the one and the and all of that and the romance and the Disney stuff. It's all about you developing as an individual. So you will find someone with the potential to put right things that are wrong. So it might be that you have a really distant father and you find someone who appears really lovely and love bombs you like mad, and it's really wonderful and it feels like you're really close. Then you get into the relationship and they turn out to be really distant, just like your dad.
And you're reliving that.
And you're reliving
trauma, the early, I guess,
but
with
you
a
don't
small
know
tea.
That beforehand.
No.
You just somehow it's unconsciously conveyed.
Yeah, but by the time you see that they're being distant, either that's something that you work with them, or do you think that's the kind of thing that you go, okay, I'm out now because this is too hard to deal with?
So some people will be able to work with it and say, hey, we need to find a way that we're both comfortable. And they will do some work on it and they will find a way that they're both comfortable and they'll say, actually, this is enough closeness. This is good. For some people, rejecting them and saying absolutely not may be the work they need to do. And for other people, they don't deal with it. They just get angry about it and have the same fight they had in their families. And those relationships are, in fact, some of the most stable.
Yeah,
the ones
yeah.
that are the most toxic and really do stay together because they're fighting to put it right.
But
they're not going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere, yeah. So it's a bad way. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
But if they divorce or they split up or whatever, they just carry it on. They keep it going quite often.
Wow, we've covered a lot of ground here. Let's have a little break. Then we'll talk about the chorus. And then maybe we'll talk about, because this song sort of presents things as issues. And so maybe we could talk about some of the antidotes for Dua Lipa and her friend. She's 28, by the way, so she's a bit of a zillennial, as some would like to say, where it's sort of like you were saying about that slide.
She's in the middle. She's right on the cusp.
Yeah, I think she's a millennial, but
only just.
Anyway, let's have a break.
People often ask me what my regular London pub is. But that assumes there's a pub I can easily return to, so please stop asking that.
London Pub Reviews, written by Paul Ewan and featuring Tim Key. A Hattrick podcast.
Did you save my seat? Why? I'm at a completely different pub now, with different seats. Catch up.
Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Drinking with dignity. Yes, sir. Yes, madam. That's me all over.
Okay, wonderful. We're back. Here we go. Last of the line, and this is the chorus. But I'm not interested in a love that gives up so easily. I want a love that's set on keeping me. When it hurts, we don't even think to cut it off. Remember when we used to do anything for love. So when she says remember, it's interesting. Yeah. We talked a lot about generational stuff.
No, limerence, remember when. So you get this, you get hormones kicking when you're sort of falling in love. You go a bit loopy.
Ah.
And you have all these hormones. So the honeymoon period, you don't see someone's faults. You don't see them. All you say, oh, it's my rock. This is the perfect person. We're meant for each other. Oh, yeah. And everyone, your friends might all be going, oh, yeah, yeah. And really thinking, I don't see it, but anyway.
Yeah.
But you do. You project into somebody what you want to see and you think they're absolutely amazing and they're really, really wonderful and you don't notice the things that are more of a problem. Like you might always want to have been cared for and looked after. You'd have always wanted to be cared for in a really lovely way so somebody gets what you need. because you were brought up by somebody that imposed their wishes on you, that was always there doing things for you, but they weren't what you wanted. You know, they're intrusive, right? And overbearing. So you think, oh, well, this is so lovely. He knows I want flowers. Oh, and okay, that's great. But then when he starts saying, oh, let me take over your phone contract. I know you don't want a Samsung. I'm going to get you an iPhone. And starts telling you where to live and what to wear, it's a different matter.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're back with the overbearing partner again. And you don't usually notice those kinds of habits until the honeymoon period wears off. And somebody might even be concealing them deliberately because they're so loved up and they feel differently. But then the honeymoon wears off, and the honeymoon will wear off as soon as you commit.
Ah,
so move in together, get pregnant, buy a going steady ring, say you're special on Facebook or wherever they do it these days. Any of those things, we're in a relationship. So there are advantages to not saying you're in a relationship from this point of view.
Maybe that's what's going on. That's why people take so long to commit, because they know that once they do, that's when the problems start arising.
And this is the thing, though. If you've had this experience and you believe in the honeymoon period, you believe that the honeymoon period is the real relationship. That's it. And so then if you think that's it and it's gone and you can't get it back, it's gone. Those hormones have switched right off, and those hormones have made you really loved up, and they've made you think you want to be with you forever and all of that. And then when that happens, when that wears off, you can't get it back. And if you think, well, then it obviously isn't the relationship for me, and you move on, people will write songs about you.
Yeah. But people will think, well, how did I get that honeymoon period? Well, I get with someone else.
Well, this is it. And some people get sort of addicted to that. And this is, you know, Women Who Love Too Much, books like that, they're about that kind of thing.
It's something that's leveled at some polyamorous people as well. They get addicted to new relationship energy.
They do. And that's true. And it's the biggest problem, I think, in some poly relationships, where you've got a partner who's all loved up with someone else, and you're still having your relationship, and it's still really important, but you're having to put up with someone who's mooning around, giggling at texts, you know.
Yeah, insufferable.
Yes.
The worst. Yeah. But it's interesting that, because I like that. I think that's great. But I wonder whether remember when we used to do anything for love was almost Dua Lipa looking back at previous generations. Because it's interesting, I didn't realize we're going to talk so much about Gen Z or millennials and stuff.
They're not at
all. But I thought, when I see that lyric, I think that's her going, oh, remember in the 60s when they would do anything for love?
No, they wouldn't.
Then? Well, but no, that's why I wanted to ask you. Like, you know, let's say I might well be wrong here, but let's say that is what this line is saying. It is suggesting. Was it any different?
You know, I think you might get the idea from old movies and things where people say, "Oh, I'd go to the end of the earth for you," and you see people jumping out of buildings and catching people and things like that. They're generally superheroes.
That's Spider-Man. That was actually quite recent. Yeah.
So you get that impression, but some people will. And I mean, some people will do way too much to keep a partner or get a partner. They'll go to sort of stalking extremes.
Yeah.
So it isn't necessarily the best thing. It's much better to know who you are first before you start worrying about, you know, doing things for love.
But it's interesting then. I mean, looking back at some of this stuff, I thought this would be an interesting look at where dating is at the moment. And we'd sit here, we'd agree on everything, and at the end we'd go, okay, then how do we sort all this out? But to be honest, looking back at some of the stuff that you said, it feels like you think a lot of this stuff, you don't agree that a lot of these things are problems. And in fact, you're sort of just saying, continue to run from relationships when they're bad.
I'm not...
Not run.
Well,
but
if
you know
it's
what I mean.
A bad relationship, if it's a very red flaggy, definitely run, yeah.
Yeah.
Because what people don't do is they stay in really awful relationships, because being in a relationship has cachet. You know, there's shame about not having a relationship. A lot of people feel if they don't have a relationship, it must be because there's something wrong with them. But I'm seeing more people of all ages who say, I don't want somebody to share my bed with. I mean, I don't mind having sex, or I don't mind, you know, having a partner, but I don't necessarily want everything that goes with it. They get in the way.
Is that what Dua Lipa's talking about?
No.
When she says people aren't doing anything for love, and that sounds like love.
Well,
and maybe we're losing that.
I think what we're doing is saying, well, you don't have to follow the typical relationship trajectories that we've always had. You don't have to go on dates. I mean, people don't do that. They don't go on dates in the way they used to. They have sex first and then they go on dates. But quite often, you know, they, I mean, people can't afford dates. They feel awkward over who's going to pay. So they get a takeaway and they stay in. Is that all of that?
Mm. Who pays for the takeaway?
Well, they split it. They bring what they like round to someone.
Split on Monzo. Monzo split. Yeah.
So, you know, so there's all of that kind of thing going on. And so people are not doing what they used to do. They're not saying, right, well, then we get engaged and we move in together. And after a few years, we actually get married. And then a couple of years later, we have a baby. Mm. They're not. They're just not doing that. They're doing it all in different order. If they're doing any of it at all, and they're doing what suits them better. Some people are still doing that, but a lot of people aren't.
And maybe that's where a lot of this is coming from, because that fear that you're not on that trajectory, that is freaking people out, when actually people who know they're not on that trajectory and they're happy not being on that trajectory are just happier.
Yeah. And I think it started with people coming out of relationships and dating again. And thinking, oh, actually, I've been a few years on my own. I don't want someone to move in. Or it's when you get too close that the relationship starts to go off, you know, because you get fed up with someone's habits. And if you've developed your own way of being over a number of years, you don't want that. And if you've got kids and they've got kids, sometimes it doesn't work to have a blended family. It's easier not to. Mm-hmm. And then maybe they get together and live together when they're old, you know. Mm. So you're seeing more older people doing that. So it's permission giving for younger people, I think. But having said that, all over the world, in every culture, there are some people moving back to more traditional ways. But in a lot of cultures, they're stopping having babies. They're getting away from traditional nuclear family.
Well, I mean, if you were to glean some sort of moral from this story... Because I'm struggling here, because like I say, to be honest, I think what we've talked about today is sort of like, I'm trying to work out what, you know, what our message is. Is there a message?
What, Dua Lipa's message, do you mean?
Well, no, not Dua Lipa's message, because I feel like Dua Lipa's message has just been trashed.
I don't think it has. I think she's saying, I'm ready to settle down at the moment. I want more than a hookup. Good for her. Go for it. Be clear about what you want.
If you listened to the rest of the album, you'd realise you were absolutely spot on there. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. So very well
done. Well, she's 28. She's, you know, she's been around the block.
You're basically reading out the lyrics. That is bizarre.
Yeah. Am I?
Yeah, pretty much. Oh. Yeah. She talks about it being like the end of an era. And she was like, I had some fun. Now it's time for me to settle down.
Oh.
So I think it's kind of, it's interesting.
Well, okay, I haven't listened to it, but I will. But the thing is, I think we're much more in a sort of time where people are much clearer about doing what they want to be doing. That's something that we should all appreciate, isn't it? You know, make your relationship be the way you want it to be. And if you don't want any more hookups, then don't say I'm okay with casual on your, or I'm only looking for casual, to try and attract someone and then change them, which is what a lot of people do.
Do you think then, because about all the option stuff, to get rid of that, you actually just need to not use the dating apps?
I think it's very difficult now, isn't it? Because, I mean, a lot of the places where you would formerly have met don't exist anymore. And I think people are much more scared of walking up to people and frightening them as well.
Yeah, which, you know, is kind of fair enough.
But if you're talking, then it's a bit more of a gradual process rather than going up to someone and saying, would you like a coffee? It's dead cold, isn't it? So it's a much more gradual process. I mean, I know some people will swipe and then say, want sex, And, you know, the shame now is that you don't get it right, that you chose wrong. You know, it's like...
Yes. Well, is that not coming back to the beginning where it's like, that's why people don't want to commit as well? It's like, because if I do commit, then that is me choosing. And what if I've chose the wrong one in a million people on the app?
Well, it's this stupid idea of the one as well.
Which comes back to the lyric of, we all made it look too easy, which I think is like, you know, the one and you'll eventually find them, that's in all the films and TV shows and stuff.
It's, I mean, you know, I think it's all right for now, live in the moment, is okay. And I think that the people that feel, you know, maybe what she's saying is, you know, there are people that won't commit. There's this whole thing of people saying, well, I'm not in a relationship, you know, when the situationship they're in is clearly a relationship, you know, that look, there's their toothbrush in your bathroom. And there's a wardrobe full of clothes and they only go
You're
home.
2 years into this.
And you've got a baby.
You've just gone to see Kung Fu Panda 4. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've just been to the cinema together. So essentially you've just been on a date. You've come back. They've just changed into their clothes that are in your wardrobe. And guess what? They're brushing their teeth before you're going to get into bed and you're going to shag. That doesn't sound... You've been doing that for 2 years.
Or not. So they're really in a relationship because they're not...
Yeah. They're like, oh, babe, I'm tired tonight. Exactly. Oh, wow. Exactly.
There's some very interesting research about people being so frightened, about men being so frightened of getting it wrong, that they've just decided that all I'm going to do is have hookups because I can't negotiate the money thing. I don't know how to behave in a relationship. I'm not really good at sex. So I'll just cut and run.
That's so sad, isn't it? Because the underlying stuff of that is they still want to get with people. There's still that yearning for companionship.
Interestingly,
but just on a smaller scale.
Interestingly, some of this is supposed to start if people have had a relationship and come out of it and not really known what went wrong. But feel really hurt and I think I don't want to go through this again and not have any resources to manage heartbreak either because everything's so... Oh, it's expendable. Move on. You know, you know, she's right about that. There's this sort of idea that you just put it down, pick it up.
Okay. So the moral of the story, though, is be happy with now, which is great. Does that not lend itself to, though, when things do start getting tough and you go, well, this is tough now, I'm going to sack it?
Well, no, because I don't think that people should be saying, I'm not going to attempt to have a relationship because it might be hard. At all. I think you work at it together. I think being clear about what you want and what you're experiencing and being honest about it is the way to go. Not to be insensitive and really hurt somebody, but being honest is fair. I mean, if you feel that things have changed or if you want things to get deeper, it's fair enough to say so.
All right. Get out there, gang, and say so.
We can ask for opinions.
Well, we love some of your opinions. Please let us know what you thought. Obviously, on Spotify, we always put the questions up there. So let us know if you agree with or disagree with what we said. Do you interpret what Dua Lipa's been saying differently?
They probably do.
But probably, they'll disagree with how I've interpreted it. Also, some of my questioning. You know, I sometimes fear that people, because they don't watch the YouTube, they don't realise I'm pulling faces when I'm asking these questions. And they probably listen to it and go, is this guy a massive bigot? They probably think I absolutely hate Gen Z. But some of the questions I was asking, I was doing little faces afterwards being like, ugh. You know, like
no,
when I said
I
they run away
thinking,
from stuff.
This is very balanced and professional.
Oh, well, because we were taking both sides and we were
arguing
both
cases. Thinking your approach was being very fair, covering all the bases.
These are my favourite kind of episodes, when we somehow end them with you being like, oh, yeah, well done, Diggs. It's just, I can't tell you how good it is. It's so good. And it's such
a... Oh, you make it sound as though I'm never positive.
You are. It's about once every series. What, dude? No, I mean just about me. It's not true. Anyway, gang, let us know what you think on Spotify, but also message us on Instagram. We're also on TikTok and we're also on X.
Formerly known as Twitter.
I'm surprised you were so quick there because that was a sort of weird way about
it. I knew it was
coming. Okay, that's good. That's good. We're at the RSC pod there. And of course, we have our anonymous Google form, which you can send your questions into there and we can do another deep dive. I hope this has made people... We've covered a lot of ground here.
Loads.
But hopefully there's... Maybe too much. I really didn't think... I was like, really going through lyrics? Is that really going to work? But maybe that was actually a good impulse. But I think we've covered a lot of ground. So let us know if any of it has sparked any thoughts in you. And we can zone in on one of those things and particularly maybe talk about you and your own life or you and your partner or whatever. Send us those questions. We love them. They're in the bio of this episode and our social media channels, which I mentioned. We're at the RSC pod. We will see you guys next time. Make sure you're following, subscribing, wherever you're listening to or watching this now. We will see you next time for some more real sex education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.